Welcome to the DLF Dynasty Podcast with your hosts, Dan Myler, Ryan McDowell, and Matt Price.
Yeah, we are the DLF Dynasty Podcast. I am Dan Myler. That is Matt Price. We are without our guy, Ryan McDowell, this week. It's a shame, Matt, because we are on the opening day. We're recording on Monday night, opening day of free agency, and we're not going to get those hot takes from McDowell this week, but we'll have to hold for it.
Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned it in the past, like, as much as I love rookie season and much fun as we're having, you know, going over these new prospects coming in the league and next month, you know, the free agency, when it's packed with stars like this, I think it might be my most favorite day of the year when we see all of these players that we either know are good or bad sign new contracts, sign with new teams, like trying to figure out how they're going to fit with that new team. What does the ownership see in the player for signing these players that are sometimes cast offs from other teams to big money? So very exciting day. And I'm looking forward to chatting with you about it.
Yeah. Free agency. It's hot. Especially this year, it seems like the class is stacked, and you know, we're going to focus on the offensive players, the skill players in particular, but the defensive side of the ball, there were impact players over there, really tilted the scales in the NFL. We won't get to all of that. We're certainly going to get to what affects our dynasty game. Matt, I was thinking today, to go off on a tangent, we started that league a year ago at the draft, remember, where it's a 10-team league, but each team owns two teams in it. And there's an AFC conference and an NFC conference. So if a team switches conferences, that player swaps from your NFC team to your AFC team. And that happened a few times. If you had Tony Pollard, today you found out he swapped from your NFC team to your AFC team. So that's going to be fun for us for the first time when we get together at the draft. If you don't remember that, we started that last year at the draft. There's five of us that get together, including Matt and Ryan, myself, and a couple other guys. We started that league. That's going to be a good time for us. Maybe we'll share those stories after the draft again this year. But we got this free agent frenzy to get to, day one of it, at least. And then we're going to stick with this rookie report. Got three more of those to talk about as well. But first, let's get to the startup. And that starts with free agency.
The startup.
Matt, the biggest name in free agency, at least for dynasty purposes, was probably Saquon Barkley. And the news came early that he was staying in the division, but going to the Philadelphia Eagles, 3 years, $36.75 million. Lots of incentives as well. I saw some tweets because the DeAndre Swift news came first, right? That he signed in Chicago. Saw some tweets then right away that said, oh, yeah, the Eagles never pay running backs. And I guess those people were quickly deleting those tweets because the big contract for Saquon and the Eagles get the premier running back in this free agent class by a long ways.
Yeah, this is I don't know how you feel about it, Dan. It's hard not to be excited to see a player that we have thought was an elite talent since his rookie season, when I think he finishes just behind Christian McCaffrey as the running back two in that season. Maybe it was even the one in McCaffrey's two, whatever it was. But honestly, since then, we've seen a player who has struggled with injuries, with poor offensive line pay, with a poor offense in general, not really doing him any favors from a production standpoint. But, you know, had a solid, I would say, 2023 season, considering everything that was going on with the Giants, from Daniel Jones getting hurt and being terrible to having to go through the Tommy DeVito experiment. And I'm sure there was another quarterback in there that I'm missing that had to play a few snaps for them. So it just kind of all fell apart in 2023, right? Now we get him moving to a team with, you know, historically one of the best offensive lines in the year. We've seen Jason Kelsey retire, so that's certainly going to be a hit for them. But I mean, I can't really remember what the Giants offensive line was back in 2018, 2019 kind of range, but I would guess it's not nearly as good as the Eagles line will be in 2024 for Saquon. And, you know, all of the offensive pieces around, we always talk about in Dynasty, what is the piece you add last? It's the running back position. When you're ready to compete, you add that elite running back, right? And that's kind of what the Eagles have done. They've got the quarterback in place, both those wide receivers. They got the offensive line. They've got the tight end. And now they have, I hope he's still elite. I think he's still pretty darn good. I'm excited about this one. Maybe it's not as good as fantasy for as we think it might be this from this first hot take kind of segment of this news. But I don't know, Dan, are you excited about this? The only thing I'm not excited about, I guess, is maybe he's going to get less receptions, which is one of his calling cards for fantasy and as a real player. That may be the one wart on this signing for me.
Yeah, that is the only wart. We're a little concerned about that. Hurts has a history of pushing the ball down the field or tucking it and running it himself rather than checking down to those running backs. So that could affect his upside in PPR leagues and really across Dynasty. Now you insert Saquon Barkley into that spot, and maybe that workhorse role that we saw DeAndre Swift have early on in the season, and maybe we'll see those 22 carry games for Saquon consistently. I think the Eagles offensive line may not be as strong as a lot of people think. The loss of Kelce is massive, and there were problems across that front throughout the season that reared its head. So while Saquon is a great player and can hide a lot of deficiencies, I'm a little concerned about the O-line. I'm wondering if they'll shore that up at all. It certainly seems like they should. Overall, though, Barkley seems in position over the next few years to be one of the premier running backs in Dynasty, and certainly did not hurt his Dynasty value, at least in my opinion. And the quarterback you're missing was Tyrod, right? He played a few games.
Yes,
for him.
Yes.
So Saquon moves on to the Eagles. That's exciting. There were a handful of other exciting moves, and we're going to get to those right now after this message from this week's sponsor.
It's tough to keep your New Year's resolutions, whether we're talking about Dynasty, we've all got so many leagues already. Are we really going to join another startup? Can we have the amount of time to take on another league? I'm going to make more trades and be more active this season. We got a lot of things going on as a Dynasty manager. And Factor is here to help you with some of your New Year's resolutions. Factor's ready-to-eat meal delivery takes the stress out of meal planning and sets you up for success in the new year. Skip the grocery stores, prep work, and cooking fatigue. Instead, get chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals delivered right to your door with over 35 meals to choose from per week, including options like keto, calorie smart, vegan plus, veggie, and more. Plus over 55 weekly add-ons. You'll have a ton of nutritious and flavorful options to start your resolutions. So how do you get started over at Factor? You go to factormeals.com/mostaccurate50 and use code mostaccurate50 to get 50% off. That's code mostaccurate50 at factormeals.com/mostaccurate50 to get 50% off today.
Dynasty Drum Beats.
Let's get to the drum beats because there's a lot of them, man. And we might as well go by position here and start under center. If Saquon was the biggest signing, the next biggest might have been Kirk Cousins, who, honestly, Matt, it was probably the worst kept secret in the NFL over the last couple of weeks. The Atlanta Falcons were interested. They paid him 4 years, $180 million. $100 million of that is guaranteed, including a $50 million signing bonus. Bonus and $90 million guaranteed over the next couple of years. Cousins, the veteran, now steps into that Atlanta offense, who's used those three first-round picks over the last few years on really premium first-round picks on skill players, right? To me, this is fine for Kirk Cousins. It seems great. He's had weapons in the past, though. He's always put up low-end QB1 numbers. He's been consistent. I like that. What I really love, though, is what this could potentially do for those weapons that are down there in Atlanta, particularly Drake London.
Yeah, I mean, we have to be excited about this for the weapons. We've seen what Kirk Cousins has done with done for Justin Jefferson over since his entire career, basically, right? I mean, Jefferson was fine without Cousins, and he will continue to be fine with Cousins. But there's no way you can't see this as an upgrade for players like Drake London and Kyle Pitts. So we saw him support an elite tight end already in TJ Hockenson. So as the pod's Pitts truther, I'm extremely excited for this. If he doesn't get it done now with Cousins in town and Jonnu Smith out of the way, but then we'll have other conversations to have regarding that. But for Cousins himself, I mean, I think you could argue this is the best set of weapons top to bottom that he's had ever in his career. I mean, you have Justin Jefferson, of course, Addison got added, and Hockenson, but you know, you throw in Bijan Robinson to that mix, right? So the wide receiver two is a little bit lacking there. I think it's Van Jefferson right now, at least on the depth chart. We'll see if that holds.
I think he's a free agent.
Some more weapons to that. Is he okay? So I mean, they have a little bit of a hole there, but like, there's plenty of weapons there for Kirk Cousins to have a successful season. He's going to be undervalued again in those super flex formats because of the age, because he's coming off of this injury. I think you could do a lot worse than Kirk Cousins as your quarterback too, with maybe a little bit higher end quarterback three to back that up in super flex leagues in case the injury is more of a concern than we might think it would be. But I think this is good for everybody.
Yeah, I think so too. And of course, Cousins is coming off that Achilles injury. That's a serious thing, but all indication points to him being ready for the season and being under center for the Falcons. Love it, love it, love it for Drake London. You know, Cousins is an accuracy-based, timing-based quarterback, and London on those underneath routes could create a lot of havoc for defenses. So expect him to take a step forward. Of the other quarterback movement, Matt, what jumps off to you? Was there something dynasty-wise that you really paid attention to?
I think there's a couple here. Baker Mayfield is exciting because I'm just happy he like got a deal. He guys got offensive continuity. He's got Mike Evans back. We'll talk about it a little bit. And what else were the Bucs really going to do? They weren't really in a position to really draft one of the higher profile rookies, and Cousins wasn't going to sign with them. So I mean, there's a lot worse they could have done with the decision, I think, than bringing Baker Mayfield back. So I like it.
He got a bigger contract than I expected. The 3 years, $100 million. But you know, we'll see what happens down there. It's the right move. If there's a Baker Mayfield of 2024, it's probably Russell Wilson, right? The prove it deal, 1 year deal in Pittsburgh, most likely going to be the starter for the Steelers. There's weapons in tow there in Pittsburgh as well. I think maybe Steelers fans are torn a little bit on what they think of this Russell Wilson signing. And, you know, it's costing them nothing. And he really wants to prove that he's not that guy from Denver. He's the Seattle Russell Wilson. I kind of like him to be a bounce back, just like Baker Mayfield did last season.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, you can see if they finally start using Pickens more creatively, you can see him catching those nice rainbow deep balls that Russell Wilson still has. Not as good as he was in his earlier years in Seattle, of course. We saw him struggle with Denver, but the second half of last season, you know, wasn't too bad from a statistical standpoint. Anyway, the team didn't go anywhere, and it just seemed like him and Sean Payton were never really going to be on the same page. So, I mean, he needed a change of scenery, and I think you can't even really argue that it's not an upgrade over Kenny Pickett. I think it's just a massive upgrade over Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph even. So, this is another signing that seems good for everybody involved.
Well, including dynasty managers, who Russell Wilson's stock has a little bit of hope being there in Pittsburgh. And, you know, now with those receivers there, Wilson certainly will push the ball downfield, especially on those second chance opportunities as he scrambles outside the pocket, whereas Pickett was more of a check down option when he was on the move. Other moves at the quarterback position, Gardner Minshew might be a solid QB2 for your super flex roster. He's going to compete for the number one job in Las Vegas for the Raiders, 2 years, $25 million. I imagine he wins that job, and Minshew is a guy that dynasty managers will be starting this year. Meanwhile, Mac Jones, you may not be starting him, traded to the Jags for just a sixth pick. You know, that makes me wonder, Matt, what are the Bears going to do with Fields if they decide to move him? If Mac Jones gets a sixth and these landing spots like the Steelers and the Falcons are gone, Fields seems like he might be in limbo.
Yeah.
He's not going to Minnesota in the division. So where's he going?
I can't figure out a place off the top of my head. It doesn't seem like the Patriots probably want to draft a quarterback. They probably doesn't want to go there. I'm a little bit worried
in 2024.
Oh God, please don't.
Backups play though. Let's go to the running back position. And, let's talk about, we already covered Saquon, of course. Let's talk about Josh Jacobs. He signs of all places with the Green Bay Packers, 4 years, $48 million.
I mean, Aaron, I think Jones, he's more talented than a backup.
Aaron Jones gets released, and Josh Jacobs is the new starting running back in the green and gold. Matt, what do you think?
As a Packer fan, I hate it. As a fantasy player, dynasty player, I think he's probably going to have, you know, I wouldn't want to say his most productive season ever, considering what he did in 2022 when he led the league in rushing. But the rushing scheme there and for the Packers is obviously very conducive to production from that position. And Jacobs is the most talented running back outside of Aaron Jones, I would say.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. It is a nice spot for Jacobs to land. When he signed originally, I thought to myself, oh boy, that hurts Jacobs and it hurts Aaron Jones. But after they released Aaron Jones, it really does feel like a spot where Jacobs could be a fringe running back one, certainly going to get workload. We'll see if the Packers add a running back in the draft, round three, round four, to complement Jacobs. But as a pass catcher, you like his ability to contribute in that way and potentially help dynasty managers by catching the ball. DeAndre Swift, we mentioned it. He signs with the Chicago Bears. 3 years, $24 million, Matt. Man, this one was a head-scratcher to me. It doesn't seem like a really good fit. And, you know, I'm not sure what you think of it, but it certainly hurts one particular young running back on the Bears roster, and that kind of made me sad, to be honest with you. Of course, that running back for the Bears is Roschon Johnson. You know, that I think we lost Matt there for a second, but the Swift signing, Roschon Johnson, I think a lot of dynasty managers probably thought to themselves that Johnson was going to be in line for a big workload. DeAndre Swift, meanwhile, signs a relatively lucrative deal in Chicago, and we have Matt back now. I was saying, Matt, it's kind of a head scratcher for me, and Johnson's dynasty appeal, it goes down significantly to me. The next signing we need to talk about here is DeAndre Swift with the Chicago Bears, 3 years, $24 million. That contract, it's a head scratcher to me, and it certainly is one that didn't really fit for me. My Roschon Johnson shares took a big hit, Matt, and it really hurts his upside. A lot of dynasty managers were probably thinking he's in line for a bigger workload in year two in Chicago. Swift getting that lucrative contract with the Bears certainly affects him.
Yeah, and this is it's a pretty big deal, right? I mean, this is like serious money for them. So it hurts Roschon, it hurts Khalil Herbert, what value he had left. But you know, he was good last year in the early part of the season, then he was bad during the second half of the season. The Eagles kind of ignored him as a pass catcher in the second half of the season. He was averaging like 3.5 receptions for 20 yards or so from weeks 1 to 11. And that went down to 1.5 catches for just under 7 yards per game in the final 7 weeks of the season. So you hope that comes back with Caleb Williams, Justin Fields, probably not him, you know, hope that comes back as part of the offensive plan, because it is his best skill set. And it's something that we were excited about him as a rookie when he was back in Detroit. Right. And then Eagles kind of took that away. We knew that was going to come based on the way the Eagles play the game of football, right? But that's one thing that needs to come back if his fantasy value is going to come back. Unless Caleb Williams is going to be so good that they lead them, you know, leads them to the playoffs, and they're truly a competitive team week in, week out, we're absolutely going to need that kind of pass catching volume from DeAndre Swift for him to pay off in fantasy and in dynasty, right? Because if it's a bad team with a bad line and this rookie, if Caleb Williams is struggling, you know, and Swift isn't going to catch the ball a lot, that's going to be, I mean, he's not going to have the same kind of touchdown equity that he had in Philadelphia, right? So this is going to be a problem for him if he's not catching balls.
Yeah, really a problem for everybody involved. I'm a little concerned about any Swift shares you might have out there. That doesn't seem like a great landing spot, although the money indicates that they will be using him often, both as a runner and a pass catcher. Let's go to Tony Pollard. He signs as the Derrick Henry replacement in Tennessee. Another 3-year deal, $24 million, just like DeAndre Swift. And Pollard now, he steps on the toes of another young running back that we thought maybe taking a big step forward next season, man.
Gosh, I'm so mad about this one. I'm so mad about this. We finally got out of the shadow of Derrick Henry for Tajay Spears. Like, we already had him penciled in. Was thinking about trying to move him for a first round pick as we get closer to the season. That's not happening anymore. It's just another like curious signing, though. I mean, like, why give, again, this is my, was my question to you earlier about Gabriel Davis, who we'll get to, but why would you pay that money to Tony Pollard? Does Derrick Henry think he can get more than 3 years, $24 million? I kind of don't think so. So why not just bring Henry back, unless Henry was the one that said, hey, I'm out of here, right? So this is a really curious signing. I'm not really sure how to feel about this one, Dan, except for to be mad for Tajay Spears.
Well, I'm mad about the Tajay thing, but if you look at it from Tony Pollard's perspective, it looks like the kind of money that gets him starter reps, your shares are probably going to hold on to life support more likely than they would have if he landed somewhere else. So I guess if you have Tony Pollard, you're probably celebrating. But certainly if you have Tajay, you're shaking your head right now. The other signings on Monday before we recorded included Antonio Gibson signing with the Patriots, 3 years, $11.25 million. Devin Singletary signing with the Giants, 3 years, $16.5 million. So he made a lot of money with that Texans season there. And then Gus Edwards signs with the Chargers on a two-year deal. I tell you what, Matt, I've been the guy pounding the table to sign these low-end running backs, trade for these low-end running backs in Dynasty. I think Gus Edwards is one of them guys this year. He could be a touchdown machine down there with the Chargers. Of course, Harbaugh knows him well, and that seems like a good fit to me.
Yeah, we talked about maybe Isaiah Spiller as a you know, end of the roster sleeper, kind of cheap buy-on, and like that's probably dead with the Gus Edwards signing, unless they're just going to run the ball so much that both of them can be involved. But I mean, I'm really excited, selfishly, Dan, for our team in Ryan's Vampire League, the Death Becomes You, because I think we both have Gus Edwards. If he gets the kind of volume that I think he could under Jim Harbaugh there in L.A., I think we're gonna have another kind of game winner on our Vampire teams there with Edwards.
Yeah, and it's going to be one of those, he gets the 13 carries and he catches 12 passes on the entire season. But still, he's going to score you fantasy points, and when he gets in the end zone, he's going to be a useful one for sure. The other factor there, he signed on day one of free agency, and these day one signings are important. Gus Edwards was penciled in as one of those guys that would probably sit and wait for these other running backs to sign. That didn't happen. The Chargers clearly wanted him and have a plan to use him. Let's jump over to wide receiver. Not a lot of action there. Of course, we had the signing, Mike Williams, re-signed with Tampa Bay. That was a big deal, but Michael Pittman got a long-term extension, got off that franchise tag, 3 years, $71 million. These two veterans, Evans and Pittman, Matt, if you have them on a dynasty roster, you feel good about those two- and three-year commitments, respectively.
Yeah, I mean, this was the best place for both of them. It would have been fun. Of course, there's the chatter that we want to send everybody to Kansas City, right? Mike Evans would certainly be fun with Kansas City Chiefs, but that wasn't likely to happen. And if that wasn't the case, then, I mean, he comes back. He has continuity with Baker Mayfield. He has continuity with the offense. I don't know if he's going to be able to, you know, drink from the fountain of youth like he did again in 2023 with that kind of comeback season. But I mean, you can lock it. I know you have your issues with Evans, but I mean, I wouldn't bet against him getting another 1,000 yards and, you know, between 7 and 12 touchdowns again next season. And then Pittman, I mean, I think that was just always going to happen.
Yeah, I'm actually flip-flopping now. I'm more on the Mike Evans side of things at this point. He's old, so dynasty managers don't like him. And he's going to be real affordable. 79 catches, 1,255 yards, and 13 touchdowns. I'm not saying he's doing that again, but you wouldn't be surprised if he goes 65 for 1,110. And that's wide receiver two numbers easily. So he's to the point where you can get him cheap enough that I can't believe I'm about to say it, but I'll have some Mike Evans on my dynasty rosters. Other signings, or the main signing, I guess, from Monday was Gabe Davis, Matt. Jacksonville gets him 3 years, $39 million. does seem like Calvin Ridley's probably moving on now, and Gabe Davis steps onto the field into a full-time role in Jacksonville.
I don't know what to say about this one. I feel like you just pay Calvin Ridley a little bit more than this to come back and not mess with this Gabe Davis stuff, but it does give him some variety in their receiving crew now. You know, you have Christian Kirk obviously operating out of the slot primarily and being very successful at that. And now they have the big, you know, presumably outside receiver and Gabe Davis, who can run real fast down the field in a straight line and catch some touchdowns. So if they decide to air it out more, then this is going to look good. Ridley did struggle a little bit downfield last season. Evan Engram, of course, going to be reliable. And then the running backs there for Trevor Lawrence. But I don't know. I've just never been on Gabe Davis. And if the Bills were willing to move on from him after how much they talked him up over the last several years, I'm not sure that he's going to amount to fantasy success there. And if people want to come buy him for an early second round pick from me, I'm happy to send him for that.
Yeah, I think maybe you'd even be talked into taking that mid to late second in some situations. That's going to be the going rate. It reminds me of when Zay Jones signed there. Dynasty community was like, what? You know, that's a lot of money. And then Zay Jones caught 82 passes for 823 yards and 5 touchdowns. I think something like that can happen. But maybe it's 62 for 650 and 7 touchdowns. But that's still only wide receiver 3 numbers, and we're not going to, you know, he's not going to upend Christian Kirk to be the number one target there. And Evan Engram's going to catch a lot of balls as well. He's a 4th or maybe even 5th option in the passing game, depending on the week, I guess. Last wide receiver to talk about here, Matt. Jerry Jeudy was traded to the Browns over the weekend. Only got a 5th and a 6th round pick in the draft. The Broncos are... they're not retooling. They're rebuilding there. And Jerry Jeudy gets a fresh start with Cleveland.
Yeah, this one, I mean, again, like they're giving up on an asset that we all liked at one point, but really never capitalized on the talent that we thought he had, whether that's the situation, the quarterback. I don't mean the coaching staff. I mean, there were reports that Sean Payton really liked Jerry Jeudy last year. So I don't know if that was just conjecture for the press or what, but it's just never worked out over a couple of different coaching staffs, over several different quarterbacks. It just never worked there. So I don't know if it's going to work in Cleveland either, but for a 5th and 6th round pick, that seems like a really cheap price to pay for Cleveland. They're buying these underpriced assets that probably kills Elijah Moore's value. People on Twitter are now like very excited about Marvin Mims. I don't know. What's your stance on Marvin Mims at this point, Dan? Do you think he's a sell based on this hype of Jeudy leaving and his role increasing? Because he's the more interesting player, I think, to talk about who's affected by this deal.
Well, how high is the hype going to reach? You know, are we going to get to the point where you can get the 13th pick in the draft for him or something like that? Is that where we're headed? Because then I'm out. I'm good moving on from Marvin Mims. But if it's going to rest in the mid second, late second, he's going to be on the field a lot. We're going to see, you know, triple digit target numbers most likely, unless there's multiple draft picks. And if with those kind of targets, you have to see what you have, because the upside is clearly there, right? We saw enough in year one in Denver to think to yourself, this guy might be the real deal. It's just weird that he didn't get more opportunities. It kind of indicates that the coaching staff didn't, you know, quote unquote, love the player if they weren't forcing him on the field.
Yeah, and it's going to depend a lot, I think, on what they end up doing at quarterback. I mean, are they going to move up to try to get one of those top options? Are they going to sit back and hope McCarthy falls? Are they going to, you know, maybe trade back and get Bo Nix? I just don't know what their plan is there at quarterback. Is Justin Fields an option for Denver? That was one I guess we could talk about. I don't know. I guess that would theoretically be an upgrade. So I don't know. I think we need that piece to kind of fall into place before we really see what Mims' value could be. But right now, I mean, early second round pick, I think I would probably get out of Mims for that.
Yeah, I think I would too. But there is the potential that he skyrockets for sure.
And what can you do with Jeudy? I mean,
I've tried to hope he starts hot. You're not going to get anything for him.
I've tried to move like a second, like an early second and Jeudy for a late first. Like I'm talking like 203 and Jeudy for like the 110, and there's nothing for that. Like you can't do anything with him unless you're ready to take a third round pick.
Yeah, he's a throw-in at this point, and most see him as a roster clogger, which means you got to hold him and hope he has a hot start to the season. You can move on from him then. Tight ends, not a lot of big news there. Dalton Schultz got a new 3-year deal. He had a big season with Houston, certainly helped dynasty managers. So that helps his value, at least in the short to medium term. Other signings include Jonnu Smith with the Dolphins, 2 years there. Will Disley signed with the Chargers on day one. Colby Parkinson got a huge deal, or huge, quote unquote huge, with the Rams, 3 years, $22.5 million. Zach Ertz gets a 1-year deal with the Commanders. Hunter Henry back to the Patriots. Anything moving the needle here for you, Matt?
I mean, it's good for Stroud and the Texans that Schultz is back. Disley, I think you can pencil him for what Everett has done the last couple of years, which again is not very exciting for fantasy.
He'll probably have just as many injuries as Everett too.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm glad Jonas is gone.
Like Schultz will have some tight end 1 weeks. Maybe Ertz has a couple touchdown weeks and you could play him from time to time, but there nothing's changing the dynasty game here.
We do like when pieces land in Miami and Jonnu Smith is athletic and he is fast. You know,
we got to move on. That's
it's good. An upgrade over Durham Smythe, isn't it? I mean,
let's hear from a sponsor and then we'll talk about some rookies. This week's episode of the podcast is brought to you by the guys over at DraftKings and that newest product that I've been talking about the last few weeks. It's called Pick 6. It's a pick'em style platform where you choose players to have more or less of a certain stat, things like passing yards, rushing yards, etc. But the twist that DK has made is that it's a peer-to-peer platform. So if you're contrarian and you outsmart your opponents, the winnings can be massive. It's also available in 21 states, including some that don't even have sports betting. I live in one of those states that don't allow sports betting, but Pick 6 is available. And I can tell you, I already love it, and I think you will too. So sign up using our link in the show notes, and you're going to get a brand new offer as the weather gets warmer and those Pick 6 offers start heating up with it. New customers can get an instant 100% deposit match up to $100 in Pick 6 credits. So check it out. Check out those show notes and sign up today.
It's time for the Rookie Report.
All right, it's a good one. And it's a shame that Ryan's not here to talk about him because I'd love to hear what he has to say. But you and I will have to tackle the LSU standout receiver, Malik Nabers. Good thing we don't have to tackle him in real life because that'd be rough. Consensus ranking second overall, wide receiver 2 in single quarterback rookie rankings. I have him there myself, Matt. I'm very comfortable with him there and love the upside that Malik Nabers brings. He is just fine as a consolation prize if you're not holding the number one pick in the draft.
Yeah, and I mean, I think there are – I have him in the same tier, 1A, 1B with Harrison. If you want to take Nabers over Harrison, I have no problem with that. I mean, he's just as good with them. He does different things. He's better at certain things. He's worse at others. But I mean, it's like Harrison. There's not a lot to really talk about here because he's just so good at it. The route running is incredibly silky smooth at that. He's got versatility to line up everywhere, but he does play primarily outside with his good, which is good for his NFL prospects, of course. And you see him be able to play through defenders, play through contact, making catches with defenders draped all over him. He has the ability to sell a deep route and hit a comeback on a dime just by, you know, just decelerating and create this huge throwing lane for the quarterback. There's this play against Mississippi State, Dan. I don't know if you watched that one, but he sells this comeback route and gets the defender to completely square up and then just immediately takes off uphill field past them, forcing the corner to completely like just do a 180 on the field basically. And by that time, he's already got 10 yards of separation and hits the long touchdown. He's actually PFF's highest graded receiver over Marvin Harrison slightly. So, I mean, take which one you want. I can see if I have multiple 102s, 103s in a Superflex league. Sometimes I'm taking Harrison, sometimes I'm taking Nabers. You know, I want access. I want exposure to both of these guys.
I would be just fine. If you were getting enough and you were in a single quarterback league to move down from 1 to 2, I would be just fine doing that because Nabers has elite like premier wide receiver type of upside. And it's all about the ball skill, the ability to box out defenders and make big plays at the catch point above the rim. Like premier leaper to go get the ball, to contort his body and go back and make one-handed catches or back shoulder catches. The kind of stuff that we've seen from other LSU wide receivers, Matt. And I know it's lazy, but a lot of the comps are he's got some Justin Jefferson in his game. He has some Jamar Chase in his game. And we see all that. Those tight window catches are every single game you see them. And the double moves and the downfield move, the downfield attacking the football, the ability to play big in the red zone and in the end zone. I just think he's the number one pick in most years' dynasty rookie drafts. And you're getting a bargain if you're picking him at two this year. It really does feel that way to me.
I honestly don't even really have any true negatives. I mean, he's not as strong at the catch point, I guess, as Marvin Harrison. He doesn't necessarily come back through defenders on underthrown balls, that kind of stuff. But then he does other stuff that Harrison, you know, he does, but not, I wouldn't say not as good as Neighbors does, where he's able to find the quarterback when the play breaks down. He's crossing across the end zone. He's running the direction where the quarterback is. The quarterback gets forced out to the right. He's running to the right past out in the end zone and looking for that comeback play. So I don't know. What do you have any negatives with Neighbors? I feel like I even have fewer qualms with his game than I do with Harrison, and maybe that's just nitpicking. I don't know, but like, he just seems like a complete receiver from every possible angle.
Well, I've heard some people talk about his route running, but some of those double moves are just sick. And you talked about a couple of them.
Yeah.
And you know, I think maybe some of that is from at the line of scrimmage. He uses his athleticism and that explosion, and that's all he wants to use because he's so good at it, that he doesn't have to have the intricate footwork at the line of scrimmage. I've heard some of that stuff. I'm not going to nitpick his game that much. You know, I'm to the point now, Matt, especially this week after spending more time on Neighbors, that if I had two number one picks in single quarterback leagues, I'd use one on Neighbors and one on Harrison.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, I wouldn't want to put all my eggs in one basket.
And any pick that is going to be auto lock Harrison, or somebody thinks it's going to be Harrison and they want to give me, I don't know, even like a third round pick, I would probably be fine moving back.
Well, I was just thinking about it. Like, there's the chance that you could get the 201 to make that swap.
Or
the 202, I mean. And I would do that in a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
To move down one spot.
Yeah. Definitely. These guys are neck and neck, like maybe just a slight hair advantage to Harrison, because we've seen him do it multiple years now and Neighbors really didn't break out for this 1 year. But I think more impressively is that Neighbors did it this year alongside Brian Thomas Jr., who is another extremely good prospect. So that's very impressive to me.
Yeah, very impressive, and did it in an offense where they needed to push the ball and still stood out. I love Malik Neighbors. Certainly see him as a wide receiver one in the NFL, and he has maybe elite wide receiver one upside in Dynasty as well. Wouldn't be surprised if we've seen his name in the top five in Dynasty ADP down the road. Let's move on to another wide receiver. Not the same kind of pedigree here with Roman Wilson out of Michigan, but certainly some things to like with Wilson and what he put on film, particularly this past season with the Wolverines, Matt. How did you like his game when you started watching him?
Yeah, the only flaw in his profile for me, I guess the primary flaw is his production profile. But like as watching him on the film, I mean, he has the field stretching speed, he has the quick twitch athleticism. I think he's a natural route runner. He uses things like head fakes and even hand fakes. He's strong at the catch point. You see him make those hospital balls, we call them, where he really gets led into a big hit. You see him make those even when he knows he's just about to get annihilated. My favorite thing about him, I guess, is his versatility. He played 58% of the slot, but 42% out wide, so he can play outside. We'll see if that translates to the next level at 5'11", 185. But I mean, he's not the most elusive after the catch. 453rd amongst receivers. I didn't even know there's that many receivers in college football, but apparently 453rd per PFF, only 2 forced missed tackles. That's not great. 4.6 yards after the catch. That's 310th according to PFF. So those would be the negatives, I guess. Not super elusive after the catch. And we just don't know. He's untapped, right? Like, we haven't seen the production because of the way Michigan ran their offense. So there could be a lot there than we're seeing.
Yeah, he tested well in limited tests at the combine. 4.39 40, had a 1.52 second 10-yard split as well, and looks like the electric player that we saw at times in that Michigan offense. I watched a lot of Roman Wilson, and I think he is a maybe like an unknown asset at this point, like something that not a lot of dynasty managers are that aware of, unless you're a Wolverines fan. But at 5'11", 185, like you mentioned, can play all over the field. He was mostly a deep threat, 15 yards and beyond type threat, even out of the slot, Matt. And that's not always the case in college football. A lot of times we see those short to even those quick screens and stuff out of these slot receivers. And Roman Wilson wasn't that kind of player. That offense was more pro based, and we didn't see them push the ball down the field as much as maybe we'd like. If he was playing in one of these SEC offenses or something like that, I think we'd be talking about him as a high profile dynasty prospect. And he has that skill set to play almost anywhere. And while you mentioned he's not that elusive after the catch, he has a knack for getting open, and especially down the field. I can't wait to see his fit and what an NFL team thinks of him. I think I'm basing my overall feel on him or my expectations of him on where he goes in the draft and what team he lands with, because I could see him as like a second round pick in the NFL draft. And if that happens, which a lot of people think, a lot of smart people think that's going to happen, if he gets the landing spot, I could see him as a real nice second round draft value in Dynasty.
Yeah, maybe it's just the streets that I roll on Twitter. Like, it seems like the hype around him is much higher than his current ranking that we have him right now at DLF. It was a wide receiver 13 overall. Like, I see him as like a, like, you know, people talking about him at the end of first round, in rookie drafts. And I just don't know if I can get that high on him. So I don't know how much I'll have, but I'm definitely intrigued by the profile. And the fact that we didn't really see, based on the offense that he was, run based attack primarily, and his 12 touchdowns, is that real? I'm not sure if it is for that kind of player, especially at the next level. So, he's going to be somebody I need to do more work on. I think you're going to need to talk me more into Roman Wilson.
Well, I think because he reminds me of another Big Ten receiver from last year, and how I liked him so much, and I was trying to tamper down my feelings on him because I watch a lot of Big Ten football. That was Jaden Reed, and he landed in the second round in a good spot. Another slot receiver that played a little bit on the outside and had that explosiveness and that speed, and that really turned out well. I could see the same kind of thing happening for Roman Wilson out of Michigan. The last prospect we should talk about here, Matt, is running back Jalen Wright out of Tennessee. I've spent so many hours watching Jalen Wright. I'm a lunch break kind of dynasty prospect watcher. So, you got 45 minutes. You check out what Twitter has to say about a player. You watch as many videos as you can slam in. I type in Jalen Wright's name more than any other player because he's electrifying. He's so much fun to watch. And you see the comps to Elvin Kamara. That's the common comp that you hear. Of course, came from Tennessee as well. And, maybe mine's lazy as well, but mine's actually Aaron Jones. I see a lot of Aaron Jones in Jalen Wright. And there's explosiveness, but he's by no means a power back, but he's powerful, and he converts that speed into power. I love these types of running backs. He seems like a three down back to me, and a guy that I think could become the number one running back pick in dynasty rookie drafts by the time we get to it after the draft.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about it. This class is so difficult to, at least for me, to kind of separate. And I mean, he's got the athleticism, which is something we want to see at the running back position. The vision is I don't think it's elite, but it's very good. He does make correct decisions, presses the line. You see him set up, change of directions to get the defense going one way, and he has the lateral agility to kind of effortlessly bounce back to another hole that opens once he gets the defense pressing one way. And you mentioned the power, like, and it's really impressive is that lower half, like you just see defenders bounce off of him at the second and third level, off of that lower half. You see him drag defenders, you see him shed arm tackles, the burst and deep speed is really dangerous with a player like this, Dan. But you know what I'm going to say, what I'm going to say is he's not involved as a pass catcher really until his final season. But he does look good now. He looks natural doing it on the limited opportunities that he has gotten. So hopefully it's just one of those cases. It's something that we did not see a lot of. I mean, I don't know if we can say it about the program. We saw Bijan Robinson catch plenty of passes in that offense. So I don't know. Other negatives, Dan, you see him run kind of high and stiff sometimes. But it doesn't seem like an issue for him. Like we said, the contact balance is there. Usually that's a problem with those high runners is that they can get taken down low. And that lower half is just so powerful with this guy. So he makes it work despite that high kind of stiff running style that he has.
Yeah, the running style is nothing like Aaron Jones. But the explosiveness and the ability to set up blocks and set up second cuts is right up there with him. And that's what I really like. You mentioned it there. He presses the line of scrimmage, gets that linebacker to step into one hole, and then cuts it back and hits the backside for the big play. And he's made for the big play. If you turn on the highlight, go to YouTube and just watch the highlight film. It's going to be full of 60, 70-yard runs because he turns a third and three into a 70-yard touchdown or a first and 10 into a 50-yard touchdown so often that it must have become commonplace for Tennessee fans that this is normal. This happens so often that you almost expect it at times. He's a fun watch for sure. And a guy that, you know, you mentioned some of the negatives or maybe the things that may hold him back. And I agree with that upright running style that he shows. And, you know, it's typically you see that and you see, if you watch full game cutups, you see a lot of big hits where they get knocked off their feet, right? You don't see that with him. He seems like a guy that has that real strong, steady base and a guy that can take a hit and keep moving. He falls forward. He makes plays that you think to yourself. He also drags tacklers. Did you see Did you see some of those runs between the tackles where it's not a safety coming down in the hole? Yeah. It's a linebacker that he's dragging for 5-6 yards and then putting a stiff arm on the safety. So these are the types of runs that make you think to yourself, he's not just a first and second down back. He's not just a change of pace back. I think he's a full-time runner and maybe a guy that could be the premier running back in this class because of that. You mentioned his pass catching or maybe lack thereof. I think there was enough on film from Jalen Wright for me to say he's a quality pass catcher and not just the check down guy. I think you can get him out into routes. He's got good hands and he makes plays after the catch. So he could be used as a weapon in that regard. So I see him, you know, I watched him again this week in preparation for the show. And I see him right up there with the rest of these top tier running backs and think to myself, if he gets the draft capital, and I certainly think and have seen him go in the second round in mock drafts, if he gets that kind of draft capital and lands in a place where we see immediate playing time and the potential for him to be a three down back, I could see him being a first round pick, even in super flex rookie drafts, and maybe even the first running back off the board in your rookie draft.
Yeah, and I mean, we didn't really talk about the combine performance, but he really did put on a show, 114.1 speed score, which is in the 99th percentile. That's Breece Hall level territory, just for some comparisons there. Bijan Robinson had a 108.7 speed score. Devon Achane had a 108 speed score. Jahmyr Gibbs 110. So he's from a speed score perspective, which incorporates your height and weight, basically, not your height, your weight, basically into the equation. Like, he's right up there with the fastest players at the position in the league. So he's going to have some of those big runs, even if he does get stuck in kind of a more limited role in year one. So he's a good one. And if somebody wants to say he's the running back one in the class, again, like, it's hard to argue that he's not at this point. You know, based on Jonathan Brooks' injury, where is he going to be coming in after that? The question marks around Braylon Allen that have shown up, and Trey Benson. You know, he had a great speed score as well, and put on some show, but he's got some flaws in his game as well. So, if you want to put Jalen Wright as running back one in this class, you know, sight unseen before we know landing spots, I don't think I have a problem with that.
Yeah, it's Benson, Jonathan Brooks, and Jalen Wright. Some will throw Braylon Allen into that conversation as well. We'll see what he does in his pro day. It's going to come down to landing spot and where these guys go in the draft, what the NFL says about these guys. He's right in that group, and certainly a guy worth getting excited about if he lands on your favorite NFL team and if you get in position to draft him in Dynasty. That's going to do it for this episode, Matt. I think we hit on everything, right? We got to the veterans with free agency. We got to some big high profile rookies as well in the rookie report, and we'll do more of it next week as well. For Matt, I am Dan. Thanks for listening to this episode of the DLF Dynasty podcast. We'll welcome Ryan back next week, and we'll catch you then.
Thank you for listening to the DLF Dynasty Podcast. Please remember to rate and review and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.